welcome to Authors First on the Artist First Radio Network, artistfirst.com. Tony Kaye in the studio. Thanks for joining us, everyone. To learn more about Artist First, we invite you to follow the links we've provided. We're constantly updating our homepage with upcoming guests and specials. We have weekly broadcasts as well as a library of over 4,000 hours available free on demand, covering a broad spectrum of topics. This hour on Authors First, it's my privilege to introduce author Carolyn Monsell. Her second novel, Five Reasons to Leave a Lover, is a novella and has other short stories. For your convenience, we have her website placed at www.carolynmonsell.com. I love it when authors use their name for their websites. Make it so easy. And audience, all of the broadcasts converted to MP3 format and available free on demand. So be sure to share the content that you discover today. So let's give a warm welcome to our guests this hour. How do you do, Carolyn?
Hi, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, it's been one of those fast summers for Tony Kaye. My son and was married June 4th, and my daughter August 20th. So we had two fabulous weddings in my family. And, you know, when we have those opportunities to be blessed and be together with people that we love, the time just moves by swiftly.
Oh, that is so true. And congratulations and best wishes to your children. That's wonderful.
It's been a lot of fun. I'm very proud of their accomplishments. They're hardworking and intelligent, and they've managed to survive college and careers. So, that's the good part of life, when you see the ones you love actually achieving some of their goals.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic news.
And I know that you're of the same cuff. You are very much a goal-oriented woman. You have a vision of where you want to go with your authorship and all the things that you've approached in life. And for those not familiar with Carolyn Monsell, you're in for a big treat. Now, how did your... the last time we spoke, you were in Paris.
That is correct, but now I've leapfrogged over one country, and I'm in Switzerland.
And now you're in Switzerland, and
yeah,
and
yeah.
Wow, what a great opportunity for you to sort of see what's going on in Europe, and perhaps maybe the mirror that's of what's already happened or continues to go on here in the United States. Very much a world in the midst of change.
Absolutely, and it definitely gives you a different perspective just on life back home in the States, and also what's just happening here in Europe. It really just opens your eyes to a really, truly global environment.
Yeah, you know, because obviously we're all very much, Carolyn, self-interested. What benefit, what's in it for me? Well, that's just human nature. But when you're there, you're really immersed in the element of what's in it for them.
Absolutely. It becomes what's in it for all of us. That's what's really interesting about it. And you come away with looking at everything through a different lens, and you come away with looking at everything in a different perspective. And I think that that's been the greatest gift and lesson that I've learned about living overseas for so long. I mean, for now, this year I'm in my ninth year. So I've been away from home for almost a decade now.
Wow.
And so much has changed in that period.
And you're right, Carolyn. Things change with you, with me.
Yes.
In a decade, so much can happen from 25 to 35, 35 to 45, 45 to 55. And, of course, with our good health and the miracles of medicine and, I think, an intellectually stimulated way of living, you know, we have all the creature comforts at our disposal in a way never before experienced in human history. Now we're looking at centenarians, so where will we be at 100?
Absolutely, and I'm going to knock on some wood and hope I get there, because I would think that that is pretty fantastic, especially if you can get there and be in relatively good health. That must be amazing.
But, you know, just on, Carolyn, our level here, that you and I are able from Cleveland, Ohio, to Switzerland, connect, and to the whole world, all of you, and out there, and soon in your car, you'll be able to listen to Artists First and these interviews on demand from your vehicle as you travel. What a wonderful library of content from thousands of authors all over the globe. So, Carolyn, thank you for supporting the arts on Artists First, being our guest this hour, and for sharing your enthusiasm about having that global view.
Thank you for having me, Tony. It's always a pleasure to come back and talk with you.
Five reasons to leave a lover, a diversion from your first novel.
Yes and no. When I first started writing, I suspected that I would continue with a complete series of encounters based on places where I've lived.
Yes.
So there's encounters in Paris. I fully expect that there will be encounters in Geneva, et cetera, et cetera. But when I finished Encounters in Paris, it's a very short collection. So it left a lot of readers asking me, oh, I love this so much. What happens next? And to get your readers up to speed again about Encounters in Paris, it's a collection of five stories, and they all center around one character, Ellery Roulet, and she's an American living in Paris with her family, her French husband and her twin daughters. And on five different occasions in her life, five different periods of her life, changes happen to her. And these changes are profound, and they force her to make decisions about her life, and they change fundamentally who she is, decisions that she makes. And when I finished with that book, which was a very personal book for me, when I finished it, a lot of readers said to me, I enjoyed it so much, but what happens to Ellery? You left me hanging. I need to know what happens to her. And so that actually became the basis for Five Reasons to Leave a Lover. It's actually, the novella portion is actually, it picks up where one of the short stories in Encounters in Paris leaves off. The very first short story in Encounters in Paris is called Pandora's Box Revisited, and that's where you're first introduced to Ellery and her life. And at the end of that short story, I pick it up again with Five Reasons to Leave a Lover. I really get into what happened to her that day. And it takes place over the course of basically a day in the life of Ellery Roulet. And essentially what she finds out is that her husband has been unfaithful. And it's an emotional journey for her.
Carolyn, what an incredible compliment that you've written about characters here that are engaging, intelligent, and going through things that an audience can relate to that make it so romantically compelling. This is a great achievement because that's what an author wants to do. I mean, how can I get my audience into these characters where they're begging for more,
Absolutely.
What's coming next?
One of the biggest things that I really tried to do was look at the universality of themes, something that I could talk about for which almost anyone could relate to. Everyone has been in love. Everyone has lost love. Everyone has been in relationships that have gone horribly wrong for whatever reason. And that's actually what I try to focus on and to get into the emotional aspects of this. And the idea for me really is to not only to entertain my readers, but also to make them think and consider situations that may be going on right around them or in their own lives and just consider it. And that's a big portion for me. I'll tell you quickly what the story was behind Five Reasons. And this is a true story. I was walking down the street here in Lausanne one day, and someone was driving by in a car, and the Paul Simon song, 50 Reasons to Leave a Lover, was blasting out of the radio. And I said, I haven't heard that in a really long time, but that song only gets it half right. There are a million ways in which to leave someone, but the reasons why you leave someone are actually pretty limited. And as I thought about it, if you look at almost any relationship that breaks up, it really falls down into about five reasons: death, abandonment, deception, ambivalence, and just deceit. And what I set out to do was actually to show all five of those in the novella and also in the other short stories.
Carolyn, I would encourage you. Now, my good friend and supporter of the arts on Artists First, our Washington, D.C. correspondent, Dr. Faye Williams. Have you had an opportunity to listen to any of her shows?
I have, yes.
Well, okay. Now, if you follow the link on Dr. Faye Williams' website, you'll see where it takes you. You must please send her your two books.
I will.
Yeah, and let her know that you were on my show.
I will totally do that.
Because,
thank you so much.
Because Dr. Williams, of course, is good friends with Michelle Obama.
Okay.
And perhaps she would like that volume on Paris.
I would. It would be my pleasure. It would be my pleasure because I think I take a bit of a departure when it comes to stories about Paris, because I think when most people think of Paris, they say, oh, it's so beautiful, it's so romantic, and it is all of those things.
Well, we have to think of the presidential library.
Yes.
There will be one, and wouldn't it be great if your books were there?
Are you kidding? Absolutely. How honored would I be?
Well, there you go. Authors today have to find creative ways to reach an audience and find those accolades. Get people who really know literature, love literature, can appreciate what they're reading to acknowledge it, recognize it in some way. And that is a great way to grow your business, the business of course, making and selling books. And this
Absolutely.
Is a series, a second, you know, this is a continuance of personalities that have already won the hearts and minds of loyal readers, and the future is huge, especially with the World Wide Web. And you're doing some right things there. The last time we spoke, there were no book trailers, but you have them now, and those book trailers are great.
Thank you. Thank you. And I had a lot of fun actually working with the young lady who created both of them for me. And I had never heard of book trailers before then. I'd never really paid attention to it. And I met this young woman, and she said, you know what would really help? If you actually did some book trailers. And lucky for you, I make them. And she was a joy to work with, and it was fun putting them together. And I think that they tell the story in a very nice, clean way and entice people to want to read the book.
If you would send me her information, we'd be happy to share it with other authors that come our way.
You bet. You bet.
So you're learning a lot about the business here. It very much is a business, not just of creating these characters that are wonderful, engaging. You have the total package. You really have to today, and you do. Beautiful graphics, cover, layout. Who helps you with this? Is this another hat that you wear, Carolyn?
It is another hat that I wear.
So creative.
Well, in my previous life, I spent nearly 15 years working in public relations. So I knew what I wanted, and I knew what type of image I wanted to project. And the only thing that was really holding me back was me.
Yeah.
I had to feel comfortable about doing this, because when I'm not sure about something, I'm a bit of a chicken. But once I get used to the idea and I really want to do something, then I absolutely become fearless. So I sat down one day and I started getting quite worked up and anxious about this idea of marketing. And it was even before I started writing the books. And then what I decided to do was just to throw that out the window. Don't even think about marketing. Don't even think about any of that right now. Just finish the books. And then I'll figure out what to do afterwards. And that's exactly what I did. And then I realized over a course of a total of 20 years, my regular work in public relations and then starting my own businesses, I realized that I had done every aspect of book marketing there is. I have written and edited textbooks. I have laid them out. I have formatted them. I have selected the covers. I have created the covers. I have done and created media kits. I've written media kits, and I've done press distribution. So when I thought about it, I'd done all of those things for clients, so why can't I do those things for myself? So when it came to these things, I did them myself.
And, you know, that is the way to do it. I mean, all of you have total control of your material, your characters, the way that you want them presented, marketed, the niche. You're doing it all. And even if you worked for a larger publisher and they wrote you a check for $50,000, well, you're going to sell those books. You're going to travel. You're going to put those miles on the airplane. You're going to go where they tell you to go to get those books sold.
That is so true. And the fact of the matter is control is a big, it's really important for me.
Well, you're so creative. I mean, I've interviewed thousands of authors. There's no better way than exactly what you're doing. And you could become a New York Times bestseller, sell 100,000 copies, and be self-published.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm just in love with the entire process of being involved from every stage, from the moment of conception of an idea, a thought, to writing it, to editing it, to sending it off and working in collaboration with my editor. And then from there, laying it out and going through the whole self-publishing process. I really enjoy it. I enjoy that as much as the actual writing.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, and I know some people who say, oh, no, I just can't think about that. I actually love it. And the social media aspect of it, oh, I just love that. I absolutely love it. Because you know why? It's not just about being able to push out information about what you're working on, but it's an opportunity to meet readers, and which I absolutely love. I love getting feedback from them, and I love getting ideas from them. And I'm just humbled by every time a reader friends me, for example, on Facebook. I'm over the moon every time that happens. But, you know, the other special treat about that is actually getting up close and meeting other authors, authors I've always admired. That has been the best part of all of this, getting to know them, understanding what their lives are like on a daily basis and the struggles that they go through, and finding out it's not all that different from my own struggles. And that's actually a very comforting thought. And so it's encouraging. It keeps you going when you're not so sure about all of this. And you're talking to writers who have sold those 100,000 copies, have been New York Times bestsellers, and they're imparting wisdom and advice about how you can be a better writer or what you should know about the business. I am over the moon with that just as much as meeting other readers.
Carolyn, have you thought about giving away some of the books at places where women sit and read? Doctors' offices or hairdressers or offices where there's just nothing to do and they've got to wait a half hour or an hour before they're, you know, just a place to lay them around. Have you thought about that?
I have started doing that. It's a little bit difficult with the distance because this is something that you can do far easier in the U.S. than you can here in Europe. So for me, it's really a matter of coming home for a while and doing that. Absolutely. Hair salons are my favorite. And women there love these types of stories. I mean, from my experiences, oftentimes sitting and getting my hair done, these are the types of stories women are talking about. So it's like the perfect place in order to set those books. And I often make a lot of the books available free. And give away huge sections online, give away free downloads, because I think sometimes that's just needed just for just general awareness, so people know that the book is out there. If they really, really love it, they will tell other people. So that never bothers me about having a certain allotment of it available for free to give away.
Carolyn, my brother and sister-in-law live in Chicago, and for a number of years. My sister, baby sister, was a model in Chicago, and she continues to model today here near Cleveland, Ohio. But at any rate, you'd be amazed. She actually just got invited to do a movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, so getting that book, getting your material into the right hands can really go a long way.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I just use every available outlet that I can in terms of doing that. I think that the industry is changing so rapidly that it takes more than just doing book tours and book signings inside of bookstores and things of that nature. And that's great and everything, but quite frankly, I have gotten in front of my readers easier online than I have in public.
I just use
every available avenue I can in terms of trying to get it out there.
I had to turn down Rona Barrett on Facebook.
Wow.
I know. the list can get long.
It can.
And I really intended to use it for family reunions.
Sure.
not for something for Rona to read.
It's fantastic.
But you really, today, I mean, you can have, and I know, obviously, Olivia Newton-John would love to be on Tony Kaye's list, but I have to draw the line. Priscilla Presley
you
wanted on.
Friend spots, aren't you?
Priscilla Presley wanted on. Had to say no to her. I mean, come on. But social network today is huge.
Absolutely.
And getting that book into the right hands can also be huge.
It can be.
I never in a million years, and I have three sisters and a younger brother, I never in a million years while we were all growing up that someday, while they were all watching the Monkees, I would say, yeah, I just talked to Davey not that long ago, and he came on Artist First and did an hour with us.
I absolutely love that. And you know, what I just try to remember is something that I see some authors doing right now is they try to abandon traditional channels of promotion and instead focus on social networking only, and that's a mistake. It's part of the marketing mix now. It's all of those things. It's still radio and television and newspapers and magazines and the internet in general as a presence, as well as social networking. So it's all of those things.
Well, and Oprah has her network now.
Yes.
So there's another opportunity for authors.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I try to make sure that when I'm working on a plan for how I'm going to get it out, that it incorporates all of those things, as well as reviews, as well as in-store appearances, as well as anywhere where I can get a reading, at the local library, at anywhere where I can get a local reading. And yes, as you said, if it's a hair salon, if it's anywhere where women will come together specifically, I will absolutely make sure that is part of my post.
Carolyn Monsell, our guest on Authors First, Tony Kaye in the studio. Thanks for joining us, everyone. To learn more about our guest, visit her website. I love it. It's just her name. Isn't that great, audience? Carolyn, Carolyn Monsell, if we've spelled it correctly, MONCEL.com. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. Are there other websites that our listeners should be aware of? Have you created a blog, or can they pretty well find everything they need there?
Everything that they need there is right there, including my links to Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter. So my Twitter account is at Carolyn Monsell. Very simple.
Oh, who are you preferring?
Have a favorite yet? I don't have a favorite. In many ways, I think I like Facebook more. And by the way, that's Carolyn.Monsell, by the way. Primarily because I feel like I have more choices. Twitter sometimes can be a little difficult for me in those 140 characters. I'm a writer, so I want to say something. So 140 characters seems a little bit limiting at times, but I'm getting used to it now.
Hey, brevity's the soul of wit, so...
Absolutely.
You know, it is a can be a challenge. I'm with you. I like brevity on Facebook. One-liners, man, I love it. You know, I haven't seen my cousin in probably 40 years. This is in California, and we keep missing each other. But at any rate, he has a photo, and I said, I emailed, you look like a Roman god. And he said, and that wasn't a good shot. See, I mean, it's just, there you go. I mean, three or four words and you're finished.
And there you go, right? But it's been great for me, too, because I'm so far away from my family. So it is the single place for which I can bring all my family together, all my friends who happen to be everywhere around the globe these days, and now readers and fans. And that's to bring them all together in one place is terrific for me. I don't feel a need to have different Facebook accounts. What you see is what you get. So when you're talking to me on Facebook, that's exactly what I'm going to say to you in person. So I don't feel a need to have several different accounts or anything like that.
Well, I've been with Sprint from the beginning. I'm probably their oldest customer. At least that's what they tell me when they talk to me.
Okay.
But at any rate, Sprint, I have the Android now.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's unbelievable. It has everything a human being could want in the palm of your hand.
Absolutely.
So touch everything. I mean, computer, internet, social network sites, news, information, calculate, I mean, everything.
It has everything, and I would be absolutely lost without my phone. Everything that I need is on my phone.
It's now to the point where if it's not here in my hand, then I don't want to go. See that phone book over there? It's about 3 inches thick.
Exactly.
I don't even want to look at that thing. I just go over here and type in what I want, and boom, there it is. If it's not here, it doesn't exist. It's invisible.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's the way we've moved now. If you're not here, if you're not online, if I can't get a hold of you right there, right now, you're invisible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for me, I've been that way for quite some time. It's been more like waiting for everyone else to catch up. It's been out of necessity for me.
Yeah.
To have everything to go with me. I work from everywhere. So all I need is a phone and my mini computer, and I can do anything anywhere.
I didn't buy into the BlackBerry, Blueberry, whatever those other things were. I waited, and I'm glad I did, because I love my Android now.
You love it. You love it.
I'm addicted.
Yeah, so that's I take it everywhere with me. So my phone and my mini goes everywhere with me, so I can write from anywhere. So I can be sitting in the park, and my kids are running around, and I'm writing, or we're at the beach, and I'm writing, or wherever we happen to be, that's all I ever need.
Now, remember, audience, this is September of 2011, and beginning the 2012 models, many of them automobiles, will have Wi-Fi internet access in the car. So while you're driving, you'll be able to log on to artistfirst.com and listen to our live stream or select from our library of over 4,000, soon to be 5,000 hours available free on demand, covering a broad spectrum of topics. So lots of good content, family-friendly, intellectually stimulating, never a dull moment at Artist First Radio. As you can tell from our guest, Carolyn Monsell. She's having a good time. We are. We hope you are. And if you're interested in a great book, this is something that you'll want to share. And it's just that easy. These shows are completely, you can copy, send out, post on other websites, available free on demand 24/7. So be sure to share the good things you're hearing today from our author, Carolyn Monsell. Her book, her second book, 5 Reasons to Leave a Lover. It's a novella. And now that we've really gotten acquainted with Carolyn, Let's talk a little bit about the novella and the short stories and how you fell into, I guess, this whole pattern of writing, and you're so comfortable with it, and putting together these stories.
I would say, someone asked me recently, what type of writer am I? How would I describe my writing? And I think the best answer that I can give them is that I'm a realist, to be sure. I like looking at real situations. I think real life can be every bit as compelling as anything you'll find in fantasy, so if it's told correctly. So I like looking at complex relationships, complex love stories.
Is that because you secretly wanted to be a human psychologist?
Some people would argue yes. I would probably say yes. I probably spent a good deal of my life solving other people's problems.
You really want to be a counselor.
So you bet, yeah, I think so. That's really what I wanted to be.
And there's something inside of Carolyn that says, there has to be an answer to this. How can this be fixed?
Exactly, and I have a need to fix it. So, and a lot of times that's exactly what I'm looking for in my story. So to be sure, that's the case. But there's something else that has happened to my writing, and I think it's a direct impact of just living overseas, and that is I don't feel a need to write stories in a way that have neat and tidy endings. In other words, they lived happily ever after. They might, but a lot of times life just really isn't that simple. And I really like to kind of focus on those elements and just say, this is life. Sometimes things don't always happen the way that you want them to. It doesn't make the experience any less real. It doesn't make it any less entertaining. And it's not a clever device or anything to leave the reader hanging. It's just life. Some things just cannot be wrapped up neat and tidy.
No, they can't. And now, do you try to envision these characters? Do they have a face?
They do. They do. But what's funny about that is, and I didn't start off, I didn't do this purposely, but I don't spend a lot of time doing heavy descriptions of my characters. I actually am describing them internally. What are they like?
What makes
on the
them
inside,
tick? Yeah,
not the physical characteristics.
Right, well, their mind, their spirit.
Yeah, their minds. I'm less interested in their physical characteristics, and this is not something that I set out to do purposely. But after I finished the first book, Encounters in Paris, I read an article by the great author Toni Morrison, and she said that if you can get to a point where you can start writing characters that are very distinct. And the types of pinnings that we put on characters, like race or gender or environment, you can write without that ever being important. And getting down to the universality of a character, then you've got something. And it blew my socks off, because that's exactly what I was doing very subconsciously. It's about the inner person. It's about what's going on in their minds. I describe very little about the physical characteristics of characters, because it's not important.
And she's been at it for a while, by the way.
She's been at it for a while. So if I'm going to take someone's advice, I'm going to listen to her, among other people. And but that's I didn't set out to do that consciously, but that's exactly what's been happening.
She's been on Artist First several times, you know.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic.
Well, of course.
I love her. I've read all of her books, and, you know, I'm just in love with her. But that quote really stuck out for me, because she's right in the sense that when you start doing that, people come with preconceived notions and ideas about what a character should be, or how they should be, and if they don't fit the mold that you envision, then something's wrong. And so the best way to do that is to remove that layer altogether. And that's what I've been doing. And I continue in that mode, for the most part, in Five Reasons to Leave a Lover as well. There's very little physical descriptions of the characters.
I think it's brilliant, because regardless of your own makeup, you can just say, that's me.
That's exactly
or that's my sister, or my brother acts like that. Or,
that's exactly right.
You know, and ethnicity is irrelevant. also.
Absolutely.
It's totally blind that way, so you don't look at it as, oh, that's an urban or African-American issue versus the Caucasian issue. You really, and I love that. I mean, that really makes it an appealing book.
Absolutely, and that's the number one thing that when readers write to me, they say to me, I could see myself in this book, or as you said, that's my sister, or that's my brother. My brother does that, or my brother eats in that way. It's very strange, I know. And they can relate. The characters become very relatable to them because all of those labels are removed, and they're able to not they're not distracted by all of that stuff, and they can really just delve into the story. What am I trying to tell you? And that's makes me so happy when people tell me that.
Now, I know that you're living in Switzerland. We've discussed that. Previous to that, it was Spain.
Previous to that, Paris.
Paris.
And I'm originally from Chicago. So far, only two destinations outside the U.S.
I guess you haven't made it to Spain yet.
I've been to Spain. I was there recently. For work and for vacation, but we haven't gone there to live yet. I always say it's the flip of the coin of my husband. Where are we going next, honey? And we'll know in about a year where we'll be going next.
But living now 9 years in Europe, we'll say, your mind, your thinking, the language, everything you read and see on television, shop, everything, you're totally saturated in the culture.
You're totally saturated in the culture.
How does this affect or influence you as an author?
It completely influences me as an author. As I said again about the very fact of not having a neat and tidy ending to stories is very European. If you're watching European films, there's no wrap-up to the end of them. There can be tragedy, and they'll leave it that way. There's no happy ending necessarily.
I mean, there's the cheese, there's the chocolate, there's the wine.
All of those distractions. I'm going to weigh 300 pounds before this is over with because I eat like caramels while I'm writing, which is a terrible habit as I'm nibbling on these and writing and typing. But the other thing is that in addition to this whole idea of not wrapping up neat and tidy, a friend of mine who lives in Italy, an Italian gentleman, said to me, he said, there is something about the way that you write in English that lends itself beautifully to romantic languages. He said, so I am happy to translate Encounters in Paris, for example, into Italian for you. He said, and I would strongly suggest that you do it in all of the Romance languages, so Italian and Spanish and French and Portuguese. He said, because the style of writing lends itself beautifully to that. And
wow.
I can only say that that is a direct influence of living here.
Wow.
I would never imagine that. But what's interesting about it is how much you soak up of the culture unconsciously, and it comes out in the writing. And sometimes I don't believe it myself until actually I've finished. And the imagery and just the themes that are running through it, that wasn't purposely concocted. It's when I'm finished, and I'm like, oh, my heavens, wow, I didn't mean to write that necessarily, but I'm keeping it. And you're just constantly influenced all the time. So I'm influenced by everything. It's not just what I see around me or hear on television or on radio or reading in newspapers here, which certainly do influence me. But I'm also influenced by what I'm hearing and reading and seeing from back home as well. So it's just a mixture, a big soup of all of these ideas coming together and figuring out a way to make it all work.
Hey, why not? You're hanging out anyway. Put it in Spanish.
I'm hanging out anyway. The Ellery Roulet has a husband. His name is Julian, and he is French. And I do say this in the book, but I remember when I was writing the character, I'd written his dialogue. And one of the things that I do with him is he doesn't pronounce the letter H. And this is something that I picked up while being here. Because for me, someone asked me, is location even important to you? And location for me is oftentimes, like, again, physical characteristics. It's not always that important. But what is important to me is language, how people speak, mannerisms, the little tics that people have in their personality or in their speech or just how they present themselves. That's way more important to me. And so for Julian, for example, I made him where he doesn't pronounce the letter H. Like some French people that I know, they speak English perfectly well, but they have a difficulty with the letter H because they don't pronounce it in French. So the word heart, for example, comes up art. My art hurts. And so for him, there's no letter H, which is, after a while, annoying for his wife, Ellery. So when she gets angry at him, she says, and I don't need you to correct my English because you don't even pronounce the letter H. So she makes that point very clear in the book. And I was writing some other pieces about it, and I was reading those passages to a friend of mine who's French, and she laughed so loud, and she said, now that is spot on. Typically a French man, that's exactly what he would say. And I really do pay attention to people's mannerisms and their general characteristics and language and try to work with that. Location, physical appearance is not all that important to me.
Chicago's no cowtown.
No.
You know, having that urban sense of being around a lot of people, public transportation by bus, by train, by foot, by taxi, you see a lot.
You do.
About human nature, about the way people behave or don't behave, and really very much that's also Europe. They don't have much land. A lot of people are living there, though.
Exactly. And if I were to be honest, in terms of how I kind of hone my skills of observation, it totally comes from growing up in Chicago and riding the L. You know, riding the L to school and riding the L to work. And you spend an awful lot of time in commute, so you spend an awful lot of time observing people. And I picked up that habit and continued it once we moved to Europe. People watching is a sport.
Yeah.
So,
no
doubt. I mentioned, someone asked me, are there any true stories in Five Reasons to Leave a Lover? In other words, was it influenced by anything personally that happened to you? And I said, no, but I was in a restaurant. And I was doing some people watching, and apparently I was overhearing a conversation in French between a gentleman and a woman who appeared to be his wife, and he was letting her know that he knew about her boyfriend, and he wanted everyone in that restaurant to know it. So I thought that was kind of interesting, actually. And so I took what I saw of that and what I observed, and I started using bits and pieces of that in the book.
How exciting. You're always being bombarded with new possibilities. Have you thought about the future volumes and what should we expect?
Okay, well, I have about three things in the hopper right now. The one that I'm most excited about right this moment is I have a daughter. I have two daughters, but my oldest daughter is 14. And she's already very talented. She's a very talented young writer. And however great I ever become, she's always going to be better. And that is so exciting to me. I can see it already. And we're writing a young adult novel right now.
Tremendous.
And we're having an absolute blast. And again, it's writing in the way, continuing in the tradition that I'm working now, where the physical aspects are not as important, the location is not as important as what the characters say and what they do, and what do they leave you with. So I'm having a great time writing that with her. The other project that I have.
Wait. Now, will there be a moral to the story, or what's the direction?
Yes, I can tell you the premise. And the premise is, it's told from the standpoint of a 15-year-old girl who's from Chicago. And her issue is that she is rare in the sense that she actually wants her parents to get divorced. She sees this as to people who will probably be happier if they were allowed to be with other people. And so her parents take an annual vacation somewhere around the world every year. And this year they're going to Venice. And she sees this as an opportunity to thwart any plans that they might have in terms of getting back together again, because she's so convinced that they should get divorced. But we have other ideas, my daughter and I.
Oh, you can go lots of directions there.
Oh,
and
yeah. And
of course,
we have other ideas about this.
And really, that's an age where you care. A child becoming a young adult actually has deep emotions and feelings about the relationship they see with their parents.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Earlier years, they're less concerned about it. Then they
absolutely
overlook and ignore arguments, yelling, screaming, whatever the case may be, because they're so young, they're dependent on both.
Absolutely.
But as you reach that age where you're gaining independence of thought, and concern, now you can be sort of a little more involved judgmentally about what your parents are or aren't doing for each other.
Absolutely. And you know that old saying, out of the mouths of babes, but the truth of the matter is that they understand the world far better than parents give them credit. And you even see that in Five Reasons to Leave a Lover, where they have twin daughters. And they're the voice of reason in the sections where they appear. They're the actual voice of reason. They can see the situation far more clearly than their parents can. And I thought that was interesting. And again, I didn't set out to write that, but the characters presented themselves in that way. And as we started writing this new character for this new book, she presented herself to us. She introduced herself to us and said, "Hi, this is who I am, and this is my story, and this is what I want you to tell people about me.
You're in my world now.
You're in my world." And it was like, whoa, who are you? And we are having a blast writing that. So I'm hoping we can kind of finish that up by the end of the year or the beginning of the year, because we're kind of far along with it. And we're just so excited, and we can't wait to introduce this character to a new group of fans.
Carolyn, I've heard it before. I don't know how it happens exactly. I've interviewed thousands of authors, and many of them tell me, "Look, I just start typing and I go like in a trance. I don't even know what I'm doing. I'm just writing it out. It seems like
That's exactly true.
This person
like
is sort of
possesses you.
Yeah,
and takes over.
Like this person is inside of you now, and they're expressing themselves as you're just
expressing themselves.
Yeah,
and we were shocked out of our shoes when we started writing this character. And I write, and she writes, and then we compare, and then we use what works well, and we're in true collaboration. And it's something we can do together. And not to leave my youngest daughter out, but she has great ideas too, and we figure out ways to incorporate her little ideas in as well, so she doesn't feel left out. So it becomes a bit of a family project. But I'm having a great time doing that. And then the other one is basically Encounters in Geneva, so here in Switzerland. And I think that one might be a bit of a darker book. I love to say people always think of Switzerland as being beautiful and safe and quiet and nothing ever happens here. But quite a bit happens here after dark. And I'd like to kind of explore that a little bit in a story. So it's starting to take shape now, but I'm a long ways away from finishing it. I've said that I'll probably be finished by the fall of 2012.
Well, you're right. I'm sure there are still some rolling hills and pastures and cows and chickens and so forth. But where you're living, the city life, that's where most of the people reside. And it's very much as busy as Chicago, I'm sure.
Right, exactly. So there's some very interesting stories to tell. And it just comes out of my experiences of living here and some of the projects I've worked on here. will definitely show up in that book. And I can't wait. I can't wait to finish that one as well. And I always have ideas. And I have one last one in the hopper, and it's just this idea of, you know, when I travel from here in Lausanne, where I live, to Zurich for work, it's a very long trip. It's a two-hour trip, and by train. And what I'd like to think about is this has happened to me before, and it's probably happened to other people traveling any number of places at any given time. But people tend to tell you stories. They reveal themselves to you in ways that they probably would never do if they knew you intimately, personally. I think it's the fact that they don't know you, that they feel like they can tell you things because they'll never see you again. And people do that to me. I'm a magnet for it, and I always have been. And I thought about, what if I could tell a series of, well, railway confessions? And these are stories that people are telling other passengers on a train as they're traveling back and forth. And again, I'm at various stages with that one right now, but I see that one being finished fairly soon. And I'm having a great time with that one as well. The problem for me right now is trying to keep up with all of the ideas that come in, all of the means of inspiration, and finding a way to just log them in a book and come back to them when I have time to actually work on them.
CarolynMonsell.com, the website. Thank you so much, Carolyn, for being our guest, sharing your family, your experience, and, of course, these fabulous books. We invite our listeners to visit your website frequently. I know you have lots of things coming out in the next year. Thanks for joining us. And remember, 2012, big moment, Wi-Fi coming to your car. Be sure to share Artist First Radio and our programming with everyone you know. Carolyn, anyone out there on planet Earth you'd like to say hello to or good night to before I let you go?
Yes, I'd love to say good night to a couple of people. I'd love to say good night to my two brothers back in Chicago, Tony and Kirk Davenport, and my best friend in the world, Lorraine Williams, all in Chicago, and to all my fans and my family and my friends everywhere around the globe listening. I just want to say thank you so much for all the support, and thank you, Tony, to you and your reader, to your listeners. I really appreciate having the opportunity to talk to you tonight.